Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Thank you for joining us, my friends. You're listening to a Sunday, the 29th day of August, 2010 transmission. We're going to be here for the next 2 hours. Congressman Ron Paul is coming up in the next segment on a host of issues. And then later in the hour, we're going to have World Affairs Brief analyst and editor Joel Skousen joining us with a lot of key information. And we've also got some other guests lined up towards the end of the second hour today. But I wanted to point something out of the gates. Ron Paul, 30-plus years ago, traveled the United States and talked about fractional reserve banking, the fiat money system. He warned about really proto-derivatives before those even existed and how this was a form of counterfeiting and that it was going to destroy our financial infrastructure and create a black hole that was impossible to escape from. And I wanted to go back to an article that came out earlier last week out of Bloomberg. Morgan Stanley says government defaults inevitable. Investors will face defaults on government bonds given the burden of aging populations and the difficulty of securing more tax revenue, according to Morgan Stanley. Inevitable. They're saying it's inevitable. And, of course, there's a congressional report coming out saying the exact same thing. It's impossible. They have created 1.5 quadrillion, 1,500 trillion in fake derivatives. The Washington Post says 600 trillion. But when you're talking about hundreds of trillions, it really doesn't matter if it's hundreds or thousands of trillions. The point is, it's a complete fraud. And that's why they want their world government. That's why they want these new funding mechanisms. The IMF has now come out with a new report, even naming its new global currency that it wants. It'll be backed up with carbon taxes. It continues in Bloomberg, governments will impose a loss on some of their stakeholders. Arnond Mars, an executive director of Morgan Stanley in London, wrote in a research report today, the question is not whether they will renege on their promises, but rather upon which of their promises they will renege on and what form the default will take. The sovereign debt crisis is global and it's not over, the report said. And they're talking about raiding Social Security, raising the retirement age, going after state pension funds, public and private. And there is not enough money in the universe to pay this back. It would only pay off a fraction of this fraudulent debt if they took all of your bank account money, all of your savings, increased your taxes, everything, all of your pensions. You cannot pay it back. So they're going to hold you hostage and say, well, we can fix it and you can still get part of your Social Security and part of your pension if you just let us raise taxes. Meanwhile, local governments are imploding and falling in on themselves. USA Today, of course, finally reporting on what we've been talking about for more than 6 months. Headline, cutbacks force police to curtail calls for some crimes. And you've seen, of course, Oakland and other areas saying they won't respond to robbery and grand theft and home invasions. But the taxes go up and up and up as almost all the money now converts from real services to interest on the debt to these bankers, just like Argentina, just like Nigeria, just like Rhodesia, just like what, I guess, Zimbabwe today. It's the same story. Budget cuts are forcing police around the country to stop responding to fraud, burglary, and theft calls as officers focus limited resources on violent crime. And then they go through cuts in Tulsa, Norton, Massachusetts, Oakland, California, and hundreds of small cities and towns. In some cases, they're laying off more than half their officers. In Tulsa, they're going from 110 they're cutting 110. From 739, and the police are still going to be out there generating revenue. In fact, they're saying that's their new focus. That's what they are now intensifying and pushing for. Congressman Ron Paul coming up on this August 29, 2010 edition, then Joel Skousen and more. Stay with us. ladies and gentlemen. Until the end of the hour, we're joined by Congressman Ron Paul, Dr. Paul. Of course, his son is still got a healthy lead against the Democratic candidate there in Kentucky and needs your support. We'll talk a little bit about the hoaxes. There's five of them we've counted that have been run, but we're mainly going to focus on the Iran situation, the economy, and so much more. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So much is happening, and you're always nice to join us each month. I've got all my questions, but for you, Congressman, what is most important on your radar right now you'd like to talk about?
Well, I don't think anything is new. I keep talking about the same issue. The bold and broad issue, of course, is liberty, and then I deal so much in foreign policy. We don't talk enough about foreign policy. They are talking about domestic policy and the debt, and that's very good, and that's what the election seems to be about. But according to the polls, they say that nobody cares about these wars, but I have a little trouble believing that because it shouldn't take much of a leap for people to understand that running an empire and spending all this money is very detrimental to our economy. So that's high on my agenda. And, of course, the economic situation and how they're making it much worse. Hopefully, I can get as much interested in trying to allow people to opt out of the system with competing currencies because I think we're getting much closer to a currency crisis. And if people would only have that option to get out, and it's encouraging news to know that the Indonesians are now looking toward hard money, and maybe we'll put some pressure on Western nations as well.
Because if we went to hard money or a hard money-backed currency, that would take the power away from the central banks to basically build up their power at the expense of the real free market?
Yeah, that's right. I don't think you have to, by force, be able to have the political power to go in and close down the Fed. That's not going to happen soon. But they can self-destruct. What we have to do is educate people to know what the other alternative is and an option to do it. That's why I really fear it when people try to use constitutional money, silver and gold coins. You know, they can end up in prison or harassed to death or fined to death. And yet, that is the answer. Why should they fear it? They fear it because they want power, and the special interests have power when they can print the money and control it and make sure the people suffer the consequences of the inflation.
Congressman, looking at foreign policy, you've talked about sanctions on Iran being an act of war under international law and our own law. And now we've got Bolton, the former ambassador from the United States to the UN, saying we've got to hit them by the 21st. That's just 3 days away, or they're going to fuel the reactor. We've got the Gulf states lining up now in support of an attack on Iran. Our government had lied the last 3 years and said we don't have contractors or troops in Pakistan. They now admit that they are there. They're now trying to hype up an increased conflict, not just with Iran, but Pakistan. Can you speak directly to the war clouds that are gathering over Iran and Pakistan?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in the neocon camp. That's all they agitate for. They think that's the only solution for the mess that actually the West has created. The European as well as the West, including us, have created this mess. And they're determined to, you know, move in that direction. I keep, you know, hoping and praying that they're not successful and they're not about to be so stupid as to bomb Iran, but they're liable to, and that is going to be a major, major catastrophe. And then I think the argument is still going on. I don't think the plans have been laid. I doubt if it'll happen the next 3 days or next month, for that matter, but that doesn't mean the issue is going to go away.
Do you agree that we're moving towards a green lighting? Because many of the experts we interview concur that the war drums are intensifying and that the propaganda mechanisms, the very same neocons that promoted fictional WMDs in Iraq in 2002, 2003, are right back at it.
I don't know that answer because I'm not on the inside. I still think there's some disagreements going on, and it's not. If it had been, if they had been unified on this, Bush would have done it. So obviously, there's two arguments even among the radical neocons, and the other ones are that are less radical. I think it's still going on, and I think reality sets in too. There has to be some military people who are really worried about this. They, you know, what are they going to fight a war with? What happens? You know, they had these war games where they theoretically bombed Iran, and the consequence was it would be a disaster for us. So there's military people arguing against this as well. So some of the outrageous politicians are arguing go in and bomb other people who have a little bit more common sense. Economic conditions are such that where are they going to get the troops and where are they going to get the money? And that's all we need right now is more of this. So I think the debate is still going on, and I certainly don't have the answer on exactly when. But I know there's a lot of people there who would like to do it. People like Bolton, they're going to agitate until they have their way. Hopefully they don't win this fight.
Well, Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, who pushed some of the key disinfo on Iraqi WMDs, he's back, and they're putting him on television, and he's writing for The New Atlantic. But at the same time, I 3 weeks ago saw the Financial Times of London with top Clinton advisor and also Obama advisor Robert Shapiro saying, if we don't have another Oklahoma City or 9/11 to make Obama look strong, we're going to probably lose the House and the Senate. And then now other neocons are openly writing articles saying, Obama, attack Iran, we'll back you, you'll get political support. So a lot of people I'm talking to and are really concerned that Obama may back an Israeli strike or even a U.S. strike in the short term to have the people rally around him as some type of October surprise.
Well, I guess it's a possibility, but like I said, I don't know the answer to that. I think our job is to point out the great dangers and at least, explain to many of our friends in the conservative movement that, the typical conservatives shouldn't be endorsing illegal, unconstitutional wars of aggression, and that I think that should be our job, and I just can't say that I can either alter the future nor know the future, but I do know what our obligations ought to be.
Looking at the economy, many economists are saying we're really in a depression if you look at the old standards of economic analysis, but that there's a lot of cooking of the books now. Now the mainstream media is saying, okay, it's a double dip recession. They're talking about the Federal Reserve putting out trillions of more dollars the taxpayers will have to pay back. Congressman Paul studying the economy and being very accurate in predicting what happened in 2008 and that the stimulus would not work in the last year and a half. What is your economic prognosis for the United States?
Well, I don't talk about double dips because I don't think the economy ever really recovered. Everything that said the economy was recovering were artificial statistics coming from the government. Let's say they give a tremendous tax credit for somebody to refinance their house or buy a house, and then there's a little blip upwards. They spend a couple trillion dollars, and that translates into $100 billion or so of GDP increase. I mean, what does that mean? The cost was 10 times more than the GDP increase. So they talk about a recovery, a weak recovery, and now there's going to be a double dip. I think if we were honest with ourselves, we would say we started slipping nearly 10 years ago in the year 2000 when the NASDAQ bubble collapsed. Good jobs went overseas. We've lost jobs that never came back over that whole decade. Things got much, much worse after the last crisis hit in 2008. And I think it's a continuation of downhill for us. And since they're doing all the same things that they did to put us into this crisis, we can expect this economy to get much worse. The American people are going to be a lot poorer, and they're only going to have the printing press to look to. They're going to keep printing money, and that's going to precipitate the dollar crisis, and that'll be a political crisis. That's when we better have our ducks lined up so that we know you have enough allies to replace the system we have today with a constitutional system, sound money, free markets, private property rights, all the things that we believe in. But that is coming. But once again, you don't know when. Now, we were just talking about the Iranian situation. If next week they go ahead and bomb Iran and the oil prices double or triple and one of our ships gets sunk, that war would spread rather quickly. That would be a whole new ballgame and may be what would collapse the dollar.
Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide. It's Alex Jones.
I know you don't like people to talk about how great you are, Congressman, but you really are a true statesman, a medical doctor, someone who's been given honorary degrees for your understanding of economics. And yourself, Judge Andrew Napolitano, and many others in the last 8 months have come on this show repeatedly. And I read the bill as well on air. The financial reform bill allows the SEC to have secrecy, autonomy, cannot be investigated for covering up for Madoff for 10 years. It allows this private board of the Federal Reserve to have more power over the economy in their 97 years of looting as a front group for private banks. And now that's all come true. So I'd like you to speak to that, A. But then B, you also read the different versions of the health care bill and said this raises taxes, cuts benefits. It does allow the government to come in and set parameters on what type of care people will get. And the Democrats and Republican leadership, they stonewalled on this and said none of that was true. Now, everything you said 6 months ago on this show is admitted. They're coming out and admitting, okay, this doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. It's a tax increase, and the insurance companies wrote it to rip you off as a bailout. Okay, it's true. This gives the Federal Reserve even more power, and more junk bonds are being issued, and record derivatives are being issued. I mean, it's clear they're accelerating all this over the edge of the cliff. So I mean, you've been proven right again. I mean, it's so incredible how criminal this is.
Well, I guess it's better late than never. You know, people are starting to read it and find out. I think the most atrocious statement came from Nancy Pelosi when she says, well, when people were arguing, well, we need to see the bill and study it, she says something like, well, we need to pass the bill so we can read it. And that's, boy, the understatement of the century, because that's exactly what happens. And even as hard as my staff works, every little comma and every little phrase, it is pretty tough to dissect all of that. That's why the whole process is so bad. But I protect myself against ever endorsing that, because it doesn't take long to find out what their goals are and what their intent is, making government bigger, raising more taxes. But even as bad as it is, it's even worse than some people think. Barney Frank is a big regulator. He loves this stuff, and I work with him on some issues, but obviously on this regulatory bill, I did not. And he, I believe, was honestly surprised about how much more power was given to the SEC, because he has a sort of an instinct of more transparency, and he actually wants to do something about that. And he is probably the most informed person about that bill as it was going through. I'm amazed at how much detail he knows, but he can't possibly know every single thing the Fed and the SEC does behind the scenes. It sticks this stuff in at the last minute, and it's just absolutely out of control, and that's why this system will end and has to be replaced by something else.
Again, Congressman Ron Paul joins us. Remember what, a month and a half ago, Senator DeMint got up and reported that 94% of the Senate bills are never even read and are literally written by the special interest lobbyists, many of them foreign lobbyists. This is a foreign corporate takeover of our government. If the president can launch wars without Congress declaring it, the private central banks can issue all this fiat currency to their enrichment and our detriment. But he said in his speech he didn't know the number on the House. Do we have any idea of what number of House bills are never even read and are brought out 30 minutes before they're passed?
Not exactly. The big problem would be that some of those bills float around and you can read them, but when the night before they're due to come to the floor, they go to the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee has tremendous license to change things. The chairman of the Rules Committee can have a manager's amendment, which was used originally to change some grammatical things and just a few technical things, technical changes. But now they use the manager's amendment to replace the whole bill. that's what they did with the Patriot Act. They, you know, Bob Barr and others tried to protect us to a degree, you know, against the Patriot Act. He worked months on, or at least several weeks on that. But when the manager's amendment came from the Rules Committee, they put the whole new bill into it, which meant that nobody could read it. So it depends on the particular issue. But even if the bill's available, the financial reform bill was available and discussed in a lot of hearings and a lot of talk, but that still doesn't mean that many members would have had a total comprehension and been able to read this bill. It is so massive. So I would say that if you were talking about how often all the members read everything that's being presented, I would think that it's less than 5% where people can say, oh, I've read the whole bill and I fully understand it. That just very rarely happens.
And that's why you're known as Dr. No, and they tried to criticize you, because if you can't read some 3,000-page bill and they give it to you an hour before it's time to vote, it would be immoral for you to pass it.
Now, that should be an easy no for everybody, and hopefully what's going on in this country, it'll get easier, because the American people are sick and tired of this. I mean, sometimes they just say, why don't you guys read the bills? Why don't we do anything else? Let's have a delayed time. Read the bills. But that I think is good, that the American people are getting very upset with the status quo, and I think they're wise enough now to be very cautious about saying, well, if we just elect the Republicans, they'll take care of us. So this is a Republican versus Democrat issue. It isn't. It's the people who believe in big government and big taxes and a lot of war and welfare against the people who have to pay all the bills, and all they want is to be left alone.
Congressman, even establishment political analysts, as you know, admit there's been one of the biggest political realignments in history against the Democrats and the Republicans. Almost every pro-establishment candidate, whether they be Democrat or Republican, are losing in the primaries, and great patriots like your son, Dr. Rand Paul, are winning. That's got the system panicked. And the Daily Poll ran a story yesterday. Says Ron Paul to run for president in 2012, will announce in January 2011. You know, I don't have any inside knowledge, but knowing you, you understand you'll be able to inject real issues in the debate. You know, your health is good, and of course it's great right now. I mean, I would imagine, being a man of honor, you're going to run. But this has some supposed inside official who's unnamed saying you've decided to announce in January of 2011. Congressman, I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up to you.
Yeah, well, I don't know where they got that. They didn't get it from me. And the truth is what I've been saying for many, many months. I haven't decided to run. I haven't decided not to run. And it will obviously not be now or linked. It would not be this year. And it'll depend a lot on what I perceive as support. You know, a lot of people like what I'm doing and they encourage me, but there are some that are saying, well, it's time for you to take a rest. Somebody else is about to do it. You know, that sort of thing. So I need to know, you know, if the support is really out there. But certainly I gave no inside information just recently in Orlando, as was reported.
Coming at you live.
Obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth.
A lie. No man is obsolete.
You have no function, Mr. Wordsworth. You're an anachronism, like a ghost from another time.
I am nothing more than a reminder to you that you cannot destroy truth by burning pages.
You're a bug, Mr. Wordsworth, a crawling insect, an ugly, misformed little creature who has no purpose here, no meaning.
I am a human being.
Words, Mr. Wordsworth, that have no substance and no dimension, like air, like the wind.
I don't care. I tell you, I don't care. I'm a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives, even after I'm shoveled into my grave.
Delusions, Mr. Wordsworth. Delusions that you inject into your veins to make you think you have a strength when you have no strength at
nothing but spindly limbs and a dream, and the state has no use for your kind.
Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
But I would imagine if Rand does win and people support him, that's going to be a big plus for you running for president.
Yeah, I think this is all a benefit of what's happening to show that the status quo is something that needs to be changed. So whether it's Rand's race or others, I think it's all very positive.
When your son said, "I've got a message to Washington, the Tea Party's coming, no to your carbon tax, no to your elitism, no to your globalism," it scared them. So they've run five hoaxes. They claimed he wanted to get rid of the Civil Rights Act when he said, "Excuse me, I can't hear you. Yes, no, I don't want to get rid of it." They claimed he wasn't a doctor. Complete hoax. They have been caught. You know, this is mainstream news sending people from the Democratic Party to pose as racist supporters of Rand. They then, even 3 days after that lady admitted that nobody tied her up, nobody made her take bong hits, none of this happened. Still no retractions from GQ, no retractions from Huffington Post. They're still going with it. My listeners made Rand Paul hoax the number one search term last Friday in hundreds of publications, read our breakdown, saw that she'd retracted in the Washington Post, and so now it's out there that was a hoax. But I'm worried if he doesn't sue them, or at least stand up to them, next they'll say he killed Kennedy. Next they'll say he killed Jesus. Next they'll say that he burned the Reichstag. Next he'll say that, he let the cows out of the gate. I mean, next he'll say he's causing the wildfires in Russia. I mean, there's no end to how desperate they are. Yeah. I'm really worried about your son.
Well, there's a couple ways you can handle that. I do think you have to answer back. You just can't let it sitting out there. But you can't get overly defensive, or it gives them too much credibility. And I've been under those attacks, too, because and I'm sure you share my views about how outrageous the war on drugs is and how that violates our civil liberties. So I've never supported the war on drugs yet. I detest the use of drugs for kids and all that. But they used that against me in 96. And I put a TV ad on, and I defended myself and explained why it's the war on drugs, not the drugs that I promote. And I think the other thing that we did that is so important is to try to get an image out there. I can say a lot of things that might be controversial, but by this time, the people in Texas and people in my district know me, and they trust me, and then when they say, "Oh, Ron Paul wants to give kids drugs," nobody believes that stuff. Like all these things you're suggesting, nobody's going to believe that the more people know Rand. So when they get to know him and see him as a physician with kids, last night I talked to him on the phone, which is rather rare, and he was out at a soccer game with his kids, So that's, if they see that, I told him, I said, "What you need to do is just make sure people know who you are." But I agree with you. You also have to be alert. You have to be willing to defend. I think it actually happened. They didn't threaten, but they insinuated that they might have to consider legal action. I think that's finally when there was a slight backing down on that, when they finally got the information from the girl and said, "Oh, no, I really didn't say that." So I think...
Well, my point is, Congressman, it shows how desperate they are. I mean, this is some of the dirtiest tricks I've ever seen, because they know he's a real bona fide true constitutionalist, and if he becomes the leader of the Tea Party, that is going to supercharge you, perhaps even winning the presidency. We have to think big and realize that this is possible, and we have to realize that they're going to run other dirty tricks against you, and we've got to understand that's why it's so important to get behind Campaign for Liberty and donate, to get behind Rand right now, letters to the editor, everything. We've got to get him in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and so far things are looking pretty good. I think he's holding his lead, and that's good. And there's still a few months, but I think your word of caution is legitimate, because there's still a couple of months to go, and if they've done that much already, at the end, when they think you don't have enough time to answer or clarify, they may throw a lot more mud around.
They may claim he's really a vampire. I mean, there's. They may say he's the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, let's hope they get over the top. I think they are over the top, and I think they've lost their credibility. People are a little more sophisticated than I think a lot of people give them credit for. I was I assumed for many years, well, if they ever know what I really believe in, how little government I believe in, I couldn't possibly get elected. So sometimes I even surprise myself when people, wow, people really don't like big government. They want to be left alone.
Well, you know what Victor Hugo said, Congressman? No army can stop an idea whose time has come. And do you agree that we've seen a massive realignment and the pendulum is now swinging back, but we're in the maximum phase of danger because the ruling class is going to try to keep this this crony socialist system in place?
Yeah, they'll be desperate, and they have still a lot of power. They have a lot of guns, and they have the political power. But the ideas, like you say, are more powerful than the army. So I want to always work real hard at remaining optimistic that present our views, and we can overcome all the bad ideas that we're suffering from today.
Congressman, in closing, I hate to bring up what I see as distractions, but the Ground Zero Mosque is now the biggest story in the country and is a diversion. This is kind of a liberal sect of Muslims, but regardless, I don't like ever agreeing with Obama, and I do think they should look for another place just because the community's gotten so outraged. But I am against government coming in and saying what people can do religiously and violating the First Amendment. What's your view on that, A? And B, Pelosi, though, saying she wants to investigate anybody who's upset about it, implying that people don't have a right to be upset. So we're seeing tyranny from both sides.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a big distraction. This is a grand distraction from the real issue. You know, the country's engulfed in this war as well as this financial crisis, and they're spending all the time on this. But to me, it should have been a grand opportunity, and you really touched on the opportunity, because this is a property rights issue. Who owns the property? And it's also a civil liberties issue. It's a freedom of speech issue. And this to me, is so different than what the liberals say. The liberals say, well, we'll allow you to speak, but not protect your private property. Conservatives say, well, we don't worry too much about your speech, but we want to protect your private your property rights. You know, they want to regulate all the things that we do in stores and how much salt you can use in restaurants and all that. So then when you get a guy like Bloomberg, he's up there saying, oh, yeah, this is a property rights issue. But think of what Bloomberg does to property rights issue. I think this is a tremendously opportune time for us to point out that property rights and civil rights are one and the same. But I think what's behind this, it drives the neocons nuts because they can't pursue this international war on terrorism without having a hated enemy, and the hated enemy is Islam. And I don't believe for a minute that the, quote, religion of Islam is our enemy.
Congressman, we're out of time. Look forward to speaking to you again. God bless you.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
We'll be back.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Thomas Jefferson. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. The T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Joel Skousen is a political scientist by training, specializing in the philosophy of law and constitutional theory. He's also a designer of high-security residences and retreats. He's a self-sufficient in high-security homes throughout North America. He has consulted in Central America as well. His latest book in the field is Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. He's active in consulting with persons who need to relocate for security reasons. And it goes on, Joel was raised in Oregon, later served as a fighter pilot for the U.S. Marine Corps during Vietnam era, prior to beginning his design firm specializing in high security. And, of course, was it an uncle that wrote one of the best-selling books exposing the whole globalist takeover plan?
That's correct. My uncle was W. Cleon Skousen, who first of all started out with a very, very excellent historical book called The Naked Communist. That was in the days that conservatives thought that communism was the real problem. He woke up sometime in the 60s and noted that, in fact, the capitalists, which turned out to actually be globalists, not, you know, real, honest, true free market capitalists, were running the communists and facilitating them. And so he wrote the book, The Naked Capitalist, which was a blockbuster, started the entire understanding in the world about conspiracy theory relative to our own government.
Well, that's right. And now it's declassified what he wrote about and what other investigators in Congress brought out and Anthony Sutton exposed as well.
That's right.
That Hitler had been funded by mainly England, that the U.S. had helped put the Bolsheviks in, that they helped put Mao in, and now that's been declassified. I mean, that's on the History Channel. They create the crisis to offer the solution, and it's robber barons who want a global, consolidated, anti-free market system, and now we're coming to the end of the road on that. And I remember being about 10 years old and I could really start to read good that the naked communist and the naked capitalist were on the bookshelf at my dad's parents, at my fraternal grandparents' house. And I remember reading part of that book when I was there for a week during the summer, and that being one of the catalysts to understanding what was happening. Then I read Nunder, Call a Conspiracy, when I was about 14. And then I went out and researched real history and found out it was very accurate. But for those who just joined us, getting back into their long-term strategic goal with Obama, it's as if they wanted him to come in, get their agenda through, but then really anger the public, so they go with a fake right-wing candidate, as you were saying, lining up for World War III. Please continue with what you see coming in the near future for the United States and the world. Then we'll get into the domestic control grid they're putting into place.
Well, that's exactly right. What I was heading for is that they always create a reaction to these policies. The economy cannot be solved, at least not with Keynesian economics or government-controlled interference. It can't be solved with the Fed having fiat monetary powers. And so they know that eventually they're going to have a backlash against anyone who comes in and promises change and success, whether it's the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq. None of that stuff ends at night. So in the backlash, they're always preparing someone else on the opposite side, Team B, as I call it. They have Team A and Team B. They control both sides. And they are setting us up right now in the Republican side of the specter for this backlash against Obama. And it's very telling, as I point out in my World Affairs Brief analysis, if they pick someone like Palin, who is extremely vulnerable, who has, you know, she's got good charisma, they've been giving her a lot of play on Fox, which is the false conservative network, in my opinion. And they're also building up Newt Gingrich. They're also keeping Mike Huckabee right there in the forefront. They're keeping Mike Huckabee on tap so that if Mitt Romney, a non-conspirator, ends up making a big, strong play, they've got a way to throw him out of the equation like they did last election.
Are you saying Mitt Romney's good?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that he is not a knowing conspirator with the people. They can't afford to let someone as smart as Romney, even though he's bending over backwards to try to be one of them, he isn't. And there's a reason for that. And that is, he's too ambitious. He wants to be president. Those people we never trust to be honest conservatives. But being as smart as he is, if he did get into president, he'd be like Reagan. He'd see too much.
He wants to do what's popular because he understands that's he doesn't want to be destroyed.
Well, that's right. But he also, you know, he does have some principles, and they don't have a lot of dirt on him, so they can't twist his arms.
Now, how does Ron Paul play in, though? Because you gave a speech a few years ago that I agreed with, saying don't go with Mitt Romney, go with Ron Paul. How does the Ron Paul card play into this?
Well, the Ron Paul card played very strongly in a major episode that happened in 2008 or 2007, actually. He was responsible, in my opinion, for the entire intelligent estimate that came out and said that Iran had dismantled or not gone through with their nuclear program. They had to have an excuse to get out of their planned attack on Iran because it would have accrued to the benefit of the anti-war movement and yet an anti-war candidate in the Republican running for president. And so I believe Ron Paul's presence stopped them from going through with Iran. Now they've switched sides, switched the intelligence. But Ron Paul is even stronger now. He's been so vindicated. He is so much a household name now. They've got a real problem because he's running for president again. And so they're going to have to undermine Ron Paul with double the support that he had before, plus the fact they're going to have to work against Mitt Romney, who's got a lot of money to put himself back in. Once again, as I say, it's not that Mitt Romney is a trustworthy conservative candidate, but he is somebody the establishment has to work hard to make sure he doesn't get into office. So it's either, in my opinion, going to be Palin or Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich is also on the other side. He's a betrayer. He came from the left. He never was a conservative. He's a globalist.
He's written books calling for world government and cashless societies. And, I mean, this guy wants carbon taxes.
That's right. But remember, they tried to shove Rudolph Giuliani down the conservatives' throat in 2008. It didn't fly. That's why they had to resurrect McCain with six endorsements right in the middle of the campaign to get him. And they, you know, it was a disaster, but they at least got Romney out. That's what they wanted to do with McCain, so that Romney couldn't fill the vacuum by the demise of Rudolph Giuliani. But in this case, they have a true globalist, a new Gingrich, which they're trying to float to the American people. But that's why I say, if they end up allowing Palin to get the Republican nomination, in my opinion, it means they're going to give Barack Obama another 4 years.
No, I agree with you. I mean, she is definitely was built up, then destroyed, now been built back up again, and they are deploying her to try to take over the Tea Party, discredit it, and throw the election. And so if they go with Palin, we know they're getting ready to throw the election to Barry Sataro.
I agree completely. And if they go with Newt Gingrich, then Barack Obama's out. We're going to get a Republican warmonger in there who's going to take us to another level. Now, in my long-term analysis, I feel that the issue is not so much directly Iran, and that war is coming. But that's not going to lead to World War III, in my opinion. I think that's going to lead to a larger regional war that's going to allow Israel to clean up and create, at the same time, an increased hatred in the world for both the United States and Israel. We'll be looked upon as the bullies of the world. This plays then into the long-term globalist agenda of handing Russia and China their final excuse to finally take out the bully of the world. Now, I think North Korea is being preserved with kid gloves. You notice how they never put any real...
To be used as a future detonator.
This is the future trigger event of World War III. That's what I think North Korea is being preserved for. And Iran is only something that will continue to exacerbate the hatred of the Muslim world and the Slavic world against the United States and make us look like the bully of the world. And it will clean up and control oil assets. There's a lot of complexity there. But let me get back to the ultimate view of how we view the CIA and all of this. Now, Wayne Mattson has some very, very good analysis. He does come from a bit of a leftist agenda. And so he and other leftists tend to always view the evil of capitalism and the CIA as the evil monster, which has basically done a coup on the United States and taken over the government. I disagree with that. I think that there's a larger conspiracy which is built at these globalist leaders.
Well, of course. I mean, the CIA is just one deployment cog in the globalist system.
That's correct. The CIA is the implementer of those things. It is not the controller. And that's what we have to understand. This is not a CIA coup. These people are taking...
Well, we know the Council on Foreign Relations takes Club of Rome Bilderberg documents and admits that they then write the bills in whole, whether it's Homeland Security, immigration reform, banker bailout, and word for word, it's then passed into law. They're openly there writing the policy. Hillary goes to the CFR and says, thank you for giving me my orders.
Well, it's like James Jones told the Munich Security Conference in February. We at the National Security Council take our daily marching orders from Henry Kissinger and Brent Scowcroft and Sandy Berger. We have a, what did he say, a hierarchy. Now, this is illegal. This is a proof of conspiracy, Alex, as you know.
And that was published by them in CFR.org and Foreign Affairs. I mean, Hillary wasn't joking last year when she came and said, I'm here. Thank you for telling me what to do. And then you got Jones, the head of the Security Council, saying, we have a hierarchy. I get my daily briefings from Mr. Kissinger. He runs everything.
I do not understand what it is.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation, it's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Again, thank you for joining us. We're now kicking off the second hour. of this special encore presentation, the 29th day of August, 2010, a encore best of compilation. More of Joel Skousen coming up, and then another special guest, retired FBI agent, says Oswald didn't kill Kennedy. From Akron, Ohio, retired FBI agent from Summit County is making claims regarding the assassination of John F. Kennedy that go beyond conspiracy theories. Don Adams speaks clearly and concisely when describing the events of November 22, 1963, the day that President Kennedy was killed, and he doesn't waver from his position that Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill President John F. Kennedy in Dallas. And everything he's breaking, and we've already basically researched ourselves and confirmed, and it just adds to the fact that this is a complete and total takeover. It was an amazing interview we did earlier last week, and it's coming up here after we finish our interview with Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. In other news, the globalists are getting more and more arrogant by the minute. They came out in the last week and said, in the Associated Press, Time Magazine, you name it. Well, here's the Time headline. The government's new right to track your every move with GPS. And in something that literally parallels what the Stasi did in East Germany, the previous record-holding police state for surveillance. Now England and the United States are starting to dwarf it. They're saying, look, they can come on your property, put GPS on your property, your car, and track everywhere you go. And how are they doing this? Well, through practice, through fraudulent precedent, since the 96 Telecommunications Act, all cell phones worldwide, by law, not just the U.S. got these laws passed, are tracked by satellite triangulation via the cell towers down to just a few feet. And they're saying you have no rights to privacy and they can surveil you however they want. So they've gone from denying that they were building this control grid. Now that it's in place, they're just throwing it in your face and saying that's the way it is. And how far our nation has fallen. Now the military-industrial complex, as the state governments collapse, is coming in all over the nation and setting up military academies that are public schools. And at other regular public schools, they're saying everyone must join the ROTC. And the military recruiters are being caught threatening the youth to sign up for military enlistment after high school or they'll be arrested. That's come out in Houston and Denver and many other cities. The parents will record the phone conversations. Listen to me. You're going to prison. But you told me I didn't have to join. It's the law. Sign it. I mean, this is just all part of the criminality. This is a form of covert stealth draft that's going on. But if you think high schoolers being forced, and it's all color of law with threats to join junior ROTC and then regular Army or regular Air Force or Marines or Navy. Now the Anchorage Daily News is reporting soldiers deployed to Anchorage schools to lend a hand. About 180 troops will spend time in classrooms. A new partnership between the Anchorage School District and the U.S. Army Alaska will add a military presence to local schools. But rather than keeping the peace, these warriors will be serving as math and reading tutors, helping out in the computer lab, or maybe firing a few dodgeballs. You see what's happening? Oh, the Marines are in Tennessee and California running checkpoints to stop drunks. They're here to help. Oh, the governor says the Army and Marines and Homeland Security can't run warrantless checkpoints in Tennessee? Oh, they'll just go ahead and do it. We cover that interviewing state rep and also quotes from the governor in my film Police State 4, The Rise of FEMA. This is so lawless. This is so brazen, the way that they are doing this. And it says that they're getting them used to a military presence in the school. But remember, in the late 1990s, Hobbs Middle School, Pensacola, Florida, it was in the local newspaper, and we have this archived at Infowars.com, where the Marines came and took over and didn't tell them it was a drill and said, we're taking you to camps. Bill Clinton wants you to know what martial law is like. This is just the country being fully occupied by a stealth military takeover, a giant psyop, and it's meant to condition the troops, the police, the local citizens, the students, everybody. And it's totally illegal and the opposite of a free society, and it ties in with top secret USA and the close to a million private secret spies they now admit they have everywhere.
There's a gun and ammunition just inside the doorway.
WorldAffairsBrief.com's the website of our guest, Joel Skousen. He's been fighting the globalists for decades, and his family for more than 50-plus years. The website where you can check out our information is Infowars.com and, of course, PrisonPlanet.tv, where we simulcast the radio show in full living color with videos. We can add another level of documentation here. Let's finish up, Joel, with where you see the globalists going and what their master endgame is. If they are able to successfully pull this off, what our world is going to look like. Joel Skelson.
Well, let me go back, first of all, to what I consider a very neat piece of disinformation that got into my uncle's book, The Naked Capitalist. He was the first one to publish the famous Roland Gaither quote, where he was talking to Norman Dodd about the admitting that the purpose of the Ford Foundation and other foundations was to seamlessly, join the United States and the Soviet Union. In fact, a true conspirator like Roland Gaither never would have told the truth to a legitimate conservative like Norman Dodd trying to investigate what's going on. What he said had to be a lie. But it made it believable. He had to give some excuse because it was very obvious to the conservatives, that my uncle noted this in The Naked Communist, that the capitalists, the people in government, were continuing to fund communism. They brought Mao to power. They paved the way for the Sandinistas in Nicaragua and ousted Batista to get Fidel Castro on. So either they were communists, or in fact they were using the communists for something. And the Roland Gaither quote kind of tends to give a feeling like, well, there was a benevolent reason for all of this assisting communism. That's so that we can blend these two societies in.
Well, 7277, State Department document basically says that.
Well, here's what I think is really happening. First of all, I think that Russia and China are legitimate predator competitors for world government control. These are not being controlled directly by the Anglo-American establishment.
It's like the British creating Hitler.
That's right. He was not their puppet. They were, in fact, facilitating him because of the dialectic, because they wanted to have war. War would give them the excuse to create world government.
Well, that's like funding the radical Muslims for 50 years.
Exactly. It's like funding the environmentalists when they want to shut down domestic oil production. And that's exactly what they're doing. So they play this dialectic. We have to be very careful of absorbing disinformation like that, which gives plausible reasons for things which are not truly the real reason behind it. So here's what I think is going to happen. You have three separate predators, China, predator centers, China, Russia, and the Anglo-American establishment, or what I call the globalists. Now, they're intending to destroy one another. Right now, China and Russia are in a semi-quasi-alliance because they want to take down the West. And the globalists in the West, in fact, have been facilitating the rise of communism, not only to break down other governments so they can ride in as a rescuer and save countries from the evils of communism with their semi-socialist position, slightly better, but still controlling. But more than that, they are facilitating and hiding and covering up for especially Russian military dominance, Russian rearmament. They are exposing a little bit, but always downplaying it in their annual report about the Chinese military threat. But you notice, Alex, there is no Pentagon report on the Russian military threat any year at all. And Russia is far in advance of Red China in terms of its stockpile of nuclear weapons, underground bunker systems, the Yamato Mountain area, and biological and chemical weapons, clearly preparing to not only win, but continue to produce nuclear weapons after the beginning of a nuclear war. And the government's covering for it. Nothing's more telling of that than the 1997 story, front page New York Times, about the bunker city under Yamato Mountain. And the CIA says, we're not worried, it's defensive. Well, how did they know it was defensive? They'd never been in it. They were covering for it. They've never been in it to this day. And yet they still say that Russia is in compliance with all treaties. Absolute lies. So why are they? Are they communists? No, they're not communists. Was Alger Hiss a communist? Yes, he joined the party. But I believe Alger Hiss was a globalist who had gone into the Communist Party to help facilitate their integration within the state, but to also manipulate.
Well, that's like the Rockefellers and Armin Hammer giving them the industrial funding after World War II and right into Vietnam. I mean, they have to create the crises so they have an excuse to tax and build up their infrastructure, which isn't just pointed outward, it's also pointed inward. Separately, you raised this before we get into the big picture again and their domestic control system and how we combat that, taking back the states and local governments. You talked about disinformation campaigns. You talked about how they try to put out, you know, unbelievable garbage. And even if you try to be accurate, sometimes, you know, you fall for it. None of us are perfect. But clearly, and Cass Sunstein admits this, and we have other documents where the government admits they're doing it, but the White House regulations are, says they're on the web posing as patriots, posing as conservatives, posing as conspiracy theorists to be outlandish. And he said the government and mainstream media have no credibility. We've read these quotes, even been in the Associated Press. He said they also create infighting, classic COINTELPRO that was used in this country. And I see them just pulling out all the stops on it right now, really trying to get us to fight with each other. And anybody you see on the web, in my experience, who spends even 30% of their time or more infighting or calling for violence, it comes out like Hal Turner, they're feds.
Absolutely. Hal Turner, of course, is a classic example of somebody who really tried to instigate infighting and tension within the web. I think it's very important for us to be very, very careful, especially about the doomsday scenarios. Now, I am ultimately pessimistic about things. At least I'm hedging my bets. I feel like even though there's still a chance that we can overturn this, we can only do so if we expose enough of the actual conspiracy facts and theories that are there. And since conspiracy is anathema to the mainstream media and to almost everyone has been cautioned to think, oh, you can't accept conspiracy. I mean, they are predisposing the people to reject the very evidence that can blow this thing wide open. But with all that, whether or not we can do it or whether or not we can't win, the point is we always ought to be prepared for a takedown. You know, it would be unwise to be going forward with blind optimism and not understand the warning I'm giving about this third world war, nuclear war that's being. I mean, there's got to be some reason why the government is protecting the Russia in their preparation for war.
Well, let's talk about what you were getting into with the underground bases. I mean, I've had national TV shows here interviewing me saying, Mr. Jones, you say there's underground bases. Well, in Switzerland, they're public with 2 years supply of food and weapons for their entire population. Our government has spent more from the evidence I've seen, correct me because you're an expert in this specific area, than other governments like Russia and China. But those aren't for the American people. They're for the elite. And they admit it's part of this continuity of government program, which they can also use as their pretext to take over.
Now, there's also another element to the underground bases occurring. There are a lot of secret projects that are going on in development in Area 51 and other underground secret bases. And there are bunker systems, there's underground factory bases. They're basically doing what the Russians are also doing. They're covering for the Russians, and they're covering for their efforts. The reason is they do not intend to use these new high-tech weapons to defend America. They intend, as PDD-60 outlined during the Clinton administration, to have America absorb a nuclear first strike. Then they can come out of their bunkers and say, oh, the Russians deceived us. We didn't know that they were preparing, just like they claim they didn't know about 9/11. They do know, and they, in fact, are inducing, trying to bend over backwards to appear and to disarm, to induce the Russians to strike, because this strike is essential for bringing America to its knees militarily, at least the appearance that it's on its knees militarily, at least in terms of the public military. That's why I wouldn't have my boys in the military when this strike occurs. They're going to get nuked. And then our government's going to allow it to happen. They're going to come out of their bunkers and say, we're innocent, we didn't know, the Russians deceived us, but now we have no choice but to give military power to rebuild, give military power to a world army to prosecute this great new patriotic war. And then we'll start to see these secret high-tech weapons come out of the underground bases. It'll be after the fact, after we've lost our liberty, after we've been talked into giving our sovereignty.
I agree totally. They need these catastrophes because if you read their deeper writings that are all published, it goes back to the French Revolution and the Jacobins and the Illuminati. They wanted a 10-day-a-week week. They wanted to end the family. I mean, this everything we see in communism and eugenics and socialism and collectivism really drew on older ideas, but came into a type of coalescence during the French Revolution.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
I'll I'll be getting back into the North American Union and how a private consortium of banks is dissolving our sovereignty through treason at the presidential and congressional level as they sign away our authority. Obama is not only suing Arizona, he's now going to the UN, asking them to go after Arizona. That is coming up. But for the rest of this hour and 5 minutes into the next hour, Don Adams, who we talked about in the last 2 days, a decorated Korean War vet, retired FBI agent, who was investigating one of the people he has evidence was involved in the JFK assassination before it even happened, saw a subsequent cover-up. The information he has literally blows the JFK murder and assassination and cover-up sky high. And it integrates with the deathbed confession of E. Howard Hunt that we broke here on air with his son, the audio and video, and with all of the research I've done in the last 15 years, and, of course, the congressional report in the late 70s, finding 95% chance it was a conspiracy, not just Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. So I'd like Don to go back to his time at the FBI before the JFK assassination, and go through the newly released documents that concur the fact that he got his own FBI reports out of the archives, that they've been altered, and just the amazing information, because that's what E. Howard Hunt said. The killing was planned in Miami, and they have the Miami intelligence police interviewing the person who was photographed in Dealey Plaza, the individual that Mr. Adams was tracking. And it fits in with the Secret Service agent that said they were going to try to kill JFK in Chicago. But that got called off because he blew the whistle. Same thing that Hunt is now saying right before he died. I mean, it's incredible information. Then he'll get into the physical evidence as well, the impossibility of the official story. So retired FBI agent Don Adams is here blowing the whistle. He has a lot of courage. Sir, thank you for coming on with us.
Thanks, Alex.
You've got the floor. The website's adamsjfk.com. You got a book coming out in the next few months. You've also got a DVD breaking this down, but you've got the floor. Go over it, sir.
All right, I will. My investigation started on November the 13th of 1963. I received a telephone call from the agent in charge in the Atlanta FBI office. He told me that they had just received information from the Secret Service of a conspiracy discussion that took place up in Indianapolis, Indiana, at a meeting of a large group of very strong right-wingers. And as a result of it, there was one of the people in a discussion of four people who was an informant for the Miami Intelligence Police Department as well as for the FBI. His name is William Somerset. The principal person that was talking in the group of four was Joseph Adams Miltier. Joseph Adams Miltier and Somerset with the other two fellows, they planned, they discussed about the assassination of President Kennedy when he left Homestead Air Force Base in Miami, Florida, and traveled up Collins Avenue to the Kennedy compound in Palm Beach, Florida. They were going to take a secreted man who was willing to give his life up in a palm tree, and then when the motorcade with the open limousine came by, they were going to go ahead and shoot the president. That person was a sniper in the Second World War, and so they planned on killing him there. If that failed, for whatever reason, they had a backup plan at the White House, behind Lafayette Park, which is right across the street from the White House, and they had purchased or rented an apartment or an office, and they had purchased a high-powered rifle with a tripod, and they were going to shoot the president when he came out onto the portico of the White House or if he walked the grounds. And that was their backup plan. So all this was discussed, and as a result of it, the Secret Service called RSAC and asked for me to ask for an investigation to be conducted. And the SAC called me and said, "Don, since Miltier lives in Quitman, Georgia, in your territory, I want you to do a full background on him." So I contacted the police chief down there, William Elliott, and Bill and I went to work on Miltier, and we spent about 5 days working full-time, gathering as much intelligence as we possibly could on him. Once we acquired all the intelligence that we could get, I then took and prepared a report, a pretty extensive report. I acquired a lot of handout material from him, which he mimeographed, and he handed out every Saturday to all of the people that would take it. And I took a lot of that material from him, and there was an awful lot of bitterness and indications, not direct threats, but implied threats against the president and Bobby and them. So I took all that material and I put it all together and then hand-carried my report. I wrote my report and I hand-carried it up to Atlanta, gave it to the boss, and then turned it over to the Secret Service, and we were through with it. That was our total investigation. I finished probably around the 18th or 19th. I can't give you an exact date, but around then. And then, of course, on November 22nd at 1:30 in the afternoon, my partner and I were riding in a car, and an announcement came out and said that the president had been shot in Dallas. And then there was a radio code for code 36 for us to go to the Thomasville, Georgia Highway Patrol post, and that they had a message for me. So I went there, identified myself, and he then said to me, the sergeant behind the desk, that we were to go to the Department of Agriculture. They have a teletype they want me to read. So we took off, went to the Department of Agriculture, and once we got inside and looked at the teletype read, "The president is dead. Call your special agent in charge in Atlanta immediately." So then I was shocked and devastated, because here it is so close to what I was doing, and now they're talking about to call the boss and that. So I called my boss, and he says, "Find Miltier wherever he is and hold him for the Secret Service." And I'm devastated, because I'm thinking I must have screwed up somehow or made a mess of something, or something happened because of the close proximity and time. I went out and I started looking for Miltier, hunting him through all of his haunts and wherever he was. And I went from November 22nd till November the 27th and located him on the 27th. The first indication that I had that there was something going wrong was that my agent in charge told me that when you interview Miltier, you can only ask these 5 questions and nothing more. And I queried my boss, and I said, "Boss, wait a minute. We're passing up a very important opportunity here to find out who he associated with, where he went, who he met in his travels, and everything else. And maybe I can get a lot of information from him." He said, "I only want you to ask these 5 questions and nothing more."
What do you mean I don't believe in God? Talk to him every day. What do you mean I don't support your system? I go to court when I have to. Time. Got nothing better to do. What do you mean I don't pay my bill?
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
We're speaking with FBI agent Don Adams. This is amazing information. And in a moment, we're going to play a clip from the audio tape made by the Intelligence Bureau there in Miami, Florida. In fact, let's go ahead now and play a clip of this tape. So, because separately, you've got FBI agent Don Adams in Georgia investigating this guy before it happens. Then he learns this guy's shooting his mouth off so much and hanging out with these groups in Miami that we now know were planning it, headed up, of course, by famous CIA black op commander E. Howard Hunt, who ran assassinations worldwide, deathbed confession, talking about how it was planned in Miami. Here he is in Florida, Joseph Adams Miltier, saying to the police undercover, yeah, we're going to kill him in Dallas. We're going to kill him with a rifle. And then later, the cops go back and get another interview, and he's saying, see, I told you we were going to kill him. You think I was playing games, boy? Let's go ahead and play that audio. Here it is.
But the most startling discovery was a tape recording captured by Miami intelligence officers November 9th, 1963, just weeks before Dallas. Miltier is talking to the informant, William Somerset.
Why are you doing this? That's where we begin.
The FBI headquarters and Secret Service both had that tape within days.
I should have stopped the president from traveling instantly.
But they didn't.
And he says he was jubilant.
Bragging to Somerset, you thought I was kidding when I said he would be killed from a window with a high-powered rifle. Despite all of that, Miltier was never even mentioned in the Warren Commission report.
When Hoover set up the propaganda in the FBI, don't embarrass the FBI. That was his rules. And you didn't. So they ordered everything put into the archives and to be forgotten about it.
But Don can't forget and hopes something is done before the truth is buried forever.
I mean, when we die off, when we're gone, there's not going to be anybody who's going to sit here and tell you these things.
All right, going back now to retired FBI agent Don Adams, that must have hit you like a thunderbolt when all this came out, that other police agencies, you know, had the guy talking about how they were going to kill him in Dallas and then bragging after the fact, I told you we were going to kill him. I mean, this is open and shut, isn't it?
Yes, it devastated me to have that type of positive information on a tape recording by the two people that we were dealing with as far as that time element is concerned. And then for him to make that positive statement, he should have been stopped. The president's travel should have been stopped immediately, and he should have not gone to Dallas. When we interviewed him, I took the statements on those five questions. He denied any involvement in the assassination, and one of them was concerning Martin Luther King, if there was any threats on him, and he denied any of that information. And as a result of it, I called my boss, and the boss said, go ahead and release him, since he didn't give you anything of any positive nature in that. And the Secret Service will contact you if they decide they want him located and they want to talk to him. And that's the last I heard of him. And I forgot all about it. And then 7 months later, I was transferred to Dallas, Texas. When I got to Dallas, Texas, the first thing that my boss said to me was, I want you to look at the Zapruder film. I went in and looked at the Zapruder film. And when I looked at the Zapruder film, I saw the president take his hands and go up towards his throat with his hands, and I made a comment with two senior agents sitting there with me, and I said, hell, he didn't get shot from the back, he got shot from the front. And I was cautioned by one of the agents and said, Don, the Warren Commission's already in here working to get this thing established and that, and I would kind of hold your comments to yourself. I left there a couple days later with two other senior agents and went to the book depository. When I got to the book depository, I looked out the window and looked down on Elm Street, and there was a tree in full foliage. And I asked the two agents, I said, was that tree bare at the time when the assassination took place? And they said, no, the timing is such, it's not like you have back at home in Ohio. The leaves were still on there in November, and they're still on in June.
Yeah, live oaks dropped their leaves in the summer.
Yes, okay, which they did do. So as a result of it, I made a comment. I said, there's no way in the world, if the foliage is all up there, there's no way in the world that this individual could not have possibly made those shots, three shots in 7.5 seconds. And again, I was cautioned and said, be careful what you say. So then that was my completion as far as I covered a couple of leads on the assassination when I worked in Dallas, and then subsequently I made my transfers and stuff, went back to Ohio, and forgot all about Miltier. In November of 1992, at Christmas time, we had a get-together at a house there, and one of the fellows that was there, it was the son of a friend of mine, he said, Mr. Adams, I understand that you're involved in the assassination investigation, and I'm a buff for that. Could you talk with me about it? I did. Told him the whole story I just told you. And he said, fine, thank you very much. And then he said, I'm reading a book in my home in Houston. When I finish it, I'll send it to you. So about a month later, I received a book from, I received a package from him, and inside was the book. I opened up the book, and the name of the book was High Treason. And it was written by Robert Groden and William Livingston. And when I opened up that, there was a paste of notes on the inside cover, and it said, Don Adams, Joseph A. is mentioned in the details or in the appendix. Good reading, Larry. So then when I opened it up and went to the index, I was thinking to myself, hell, there's a lot of Joseph A.'s, and I never used his last name when I talked to the group at Larry's house. So I figured, you know, he just got somebody else. But when I went to the index, it had Joseph Adams from Notaire in the index. I immediately went to the appendix. The appendix in there talked in terms of a tape-recorded conversation. And I want all your listeners to understand this. On November the 9th of 1963, 2 weeks approximately, 2 weeks before the assassination, Joseph Adams Miltier, in a tape-recorded conversation that was done by the Miami Intelligence Police Unit, they placed a recorder in Somerset's apartment, and he was their informant, and they tape-recorded the conversation. And in that conversation, Miltier said that we're going to kill him from an office building with a high-powered rifle. And then Somerset said to him, are you sure that you... He said, oh, yes. He said, I'm sure it's in the works.
Well, Don, the real issue here is, and of course, you've researched this, you know about it, the black Secret Service agent that knew that was coming in Chicago, so they moved it from Chicago to Dallas, and of course he said that decades ago, and then documents did come out, and then there's a deathbed confession by E. Howard Hunt, the famous black op head of state assassin squad leader. It says, yeah, we were in Miami for the big event, and LBJ was, you know, running the big event, and I was there kind of on the sideline, and then we were going to be doing it in Chicago, but then it got moved to Dallas. I mean, we've just got it all right there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I heard about Hunt's statements and that. I've never listened to it personally, but when you start tying all the knots together in that, you're going to come up with an answer. And all this information that they had at their hands, I got none of it. I knew nothing about the ninth tape recording. I knew nothing that Miltier had been interviewed by my partner a year before in 1982 on a civil rights investigation. My partner said nothing to me about it at all. William Elliott worked with my partner a year before that in 82, and he said nothing to me, and we worked together extensively every day doing the workup on Miltier. Now, why in the hell was this stuff kept from me? When I go back in 93, back to 93 when all this stuff started and that, I was devastated. I was totally shocked to think that my own agency, the FBI, had covered this whole thing.
Fletcher Prouty, who himself was the main liaison between the Pentagon and CIA black ops, he got literally, you know, sent away to the North Pole so that he wouldn't be there when all this happened. And he explained how they use mafia, they use hitmen, they use right-wing veterans, and they had all these different teams, including more teams down the road if Kennedy would have escaped. Now, they have just multiple hit teams ready to deal with it. They even had the military in the air above Dallas in case the public found out and things had to be suppressed. They had the corrupt, mafia-controlled Dallas Police Department all hooked up, heavily involved with intelligence. And it's just absolutely incredible that you were there, you tried to stop it, you were on the job, and then decades later, they declassify and release the fact that this guy was talking about killing him and where and how and when before and after. I mean, this is incredible.
Alex, let me mention one thing to you that's very important. after we went into the archives in 99 or, no, it was later than that. It was in 2003 or something like that. We went into the archives and pulled the documents in that. I found a document in there that said in there that they contacted, that the Atlanta office had contacted their agent in Thomasville, and he told them that Miltier was in Quitman, Georgia, at the time the assassination took place. And that was an outright lie, and it's a totally fraudulent document. The document was done, and the words were said, but it was not true. And my partner was the only one that was there, and I left him saying I was going to find Miltier. I was going to locate him if I could, and which we did. I checked him in the morning and at noon at night, and here he, at some time, or somebody saying that he did it, said that that Miltier was in Quitman, Georgia, at the time of the assassination. There, in that book, High Treason, is a photograph of Miltier standing there looking at the presidential limousine moments before the president was killed.
That's right. I interrupted you, Agent Adams, before you got to that. So recap. You get this book, you open it up, and there he is, clear as day, looking at the president in the motorcade. Talk about that.
Sure. I mean, you can imagine when you investigate a person and you do a full background on him, and I walked up to him, like I said, and I took all this hate literature from him, which he was freely giving out in that. I spent a lot of time with this guy, and then when I finally took him into custody and took him back for interview and everything on the 27th, there was a lot of time together. And I know him 100%. And when I saw that photograph, it hit me like you said, like a stack of bricks hit me, and it just it blew my mind. I couldn't believe it that here he is. Because I couldn't locate him, and then I found out afterwards that on the same morning, on November the 22nd at 10 o'clock in the morning, before he was photographed there on Houston Street, he made a telephone call to Somerset in Miami and told him, "I'm in Jackrabbit Country. Your friend is coming here, and you're not going to see him again." And then when I said, or you mentioned later on that Miltier was jubilant over it, he was. When he met with Somerset the following day after the assassination at the Jacksonville, Florida railroad station, he told him, he said, I told you I wasn't kidding. You thought I was kidding in that, but it was taken care of, just like I said it would be. So here is this guy very heavily involved, and they take everything away from him and bury him into the archives and concentrate everything on Oswald, and Oswald never even fired a shot. The meeting that took place in Indianapolis and that Miltier was really the spokesman, and Somerset was the informant, and then one of the other two persons was a sniper in the Second World War. And he said that he was willing to go up into the tree and give his life in that to take Kennedy out.
Amazing. So who was Joseph Adams Miltier? Because the news reported he was a really violent guy.
Well, it said in a report in that book in High Treason, said he was one of the most violent men in the country. Here's another thing about it. My partner, who had investigated me here before, said nothing to me about him ever being armed. And one of the most stringent rules that we have in the FBI is if you develop any information where there's a possibility of an agent getting harmed or hurt or killed, it's mandatory that you immediately put a caution out on the man and underline it in every single communication that you put out. And I knew nothing about him being armed. After I left, then he wrote a report in January of 64. And in that report, under the synopsis, he put in there that Miltier should be considered armed and dangerous because he has a .38 weapon with him. And I knew nothing about that. So here's my partner did everything he could against every proper bureau rule to protect me and the chief and everybody else. And they got rid of every bit of that information and gave none of it to me.
Whatever happened to Miltier?
Miltier had an explosion of a gas stove in his house, and said, and the early reports were that he got killed because of that. But then I read subsequent reports after that, which said that he was burnt just slightly from the explosion of the gas stove, and that he was fine after that. He had been released by the hospital. They said there was nothing wrong with him. other than having a minor burns and that to be treated.
So you got the good ground floor FBI people and police and others trying to stop this, but up high, they block the investigation, they cover it up. And that was my next question. I had read that you had said that once you got into the archives, decades after, when they finally released this stuff, that your own FBI reports had been doctored.
What happened? My report doesn't exist. I mean, they eliminated the total report that I wrote up, and my partner, Royal McGraw, and a supervisor by the name of Charles Harding up in Atlanta, Georgia, they wrote two reports. One written by McGraw and one written by Charles Harding. And they took the material of all the people that I contacted and interviewed trying to locate Miltier and doing a full background on him, education-wise and where he worked and all the stuff that we had acquired, and that all of that was in their reports. The only thing that was in that report that had anything to do with Don Adams was that one sheet of paper of my interview of Miltier.
Well, sir, isn't the evidence of the cover-up, just more proof? I mean, look at how many people that witnessed the shooters on the grassy knoll, the green pickup truck. How many of them were murdered, killed, disappeared?
Over 300. I mean, there's been a novel written about and discussing solely the people that were involved in the Kennedy assassination, and they say that number is over 300 people now. And I just want to mention one thing that I don't want to forget to tell you, is that when I saw the Zapruder film, and I made that comment, hell, he wasn't shot from the back, he was shot from the front, when he put his hands up to his throat net, Dr. Charles Crenshaw, who worked in trauma room one at Dallas Parkland Hospital, and that as soon as he looked at the president, he said, hell, he's been shot in the throat, he's got a bullet hole here. And then later on, they had to do a trach cut on him to open up his throat to put a tracheotomy in him. But he saw the bullet hole right away. There was no exit wound in the back. Then they found where the bullet had gone through the windshield of the limousine. And apparently that slowed down the projectile so it didn't go all the way through him. And it went into his throat and stayed in his body.
Yeah, that was in the original medical report. And then they had his brain at the National Archives. And then it got disappeared.
It disappeared, right.
In closing, sir, and I want to have you back up in the next month for a full hour with your great breadth of knowledge. We appreciate your patriotism, your love of the truth, and your courage. Knowing how many people they've murdered, do you ever get threatened? Are you concerned that you're now really going public?
No, I'm going to tell you something, Alex. I've always said this. The good Lord picked me for this assignment, whatever it was. I mean, whatever it is. And if he decides he's going to call me, I'm going to go the way he wants. And I don't worry about that stuff.
And I would imagine you really learned that when you were in Korea.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I saw a lot there, and it was a heavy year. Went all the way to the Yellow River up to China, and it was an experience I never forgot, but it's something that taught me a great deal about life and how important life is.
You know who else was on the Yellow River but fighting the Japanese during World War II? E. Howard Hunt as a sniper.
Wow. Yeah, see, let me tell you something, Alex, so that you're aware of how I work in that. When I get to concentrating on my work in that, I don't dwell off into a lot of other people's work, because you could just go in forever and not really get the story. So I'm really concentrating to make the people aware of who Joseph Adams Miltier is. And that.
No, I agree with you, because your area of the investigation is conclusive. I mean, it's amazing. The website is adamsjfk.com. Now, let me say bye to you during the break. I look forward to setting you up for a full hour in the next month. In fact, we'll try to set that up with you right now, sir. Everybody, check out his website. He's got some very informative DVDs with his testimony that's an important part of a historical record.